Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Bonjour, je suis Mouloud Achour et vous écoutez ClickX en podcast. ClickX, c'est une série de conversations avec des personnalités que j'ai eu la chance de rencontrer au fil des années pour un échange longue durée. Tous les épisodes de ClickX sont à retrouver en podcast ici et sur toutes les plateformes d'écoute en ligne. Quant à l'émission Click, c'est quand vous voulez sur MyCanal et le dimanche à 12h45 en clair sur Canal+. Et aujourd'hui, la légende Rick Ross.
It was classic.
Yeah.
B.I.G. frames,
that's
baby.
It.
B.I.G. frames, baby. classic. I love the style, baby. Thank you.
How are you?
Very good.
You know what happened to me? I was walking in Paris 2 days ago, and I saw a bunch of guys laughing at the Tuileries, laughing really loud, playing games, and I was saying, that can be Rick Ross. And I just took my phone, and that was you.
Was it?
It was you, laughing at the Tuileries, at the park, like everybody could do it. And I saw you like on your Instagram, walking in Paris, like a true guy, no security guards. Is that what you're doing in all the city of the world?
Everywhere I go, I try to go and see the inner city.
Yeah.
I try to go and, you know, I try to live a little bit. So I go, what's up? A lot of times people see me and just look, nah, that can't be him.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, keep moving, you know what I'm saying? But I try to make sure everywhere I go, I enjoy it. I kind of get to know it, not just on the surface, you know, not just come perform, go to the venue and back to the hotel, but I go to the inner city.
But you were laughing like a kid. You had like the kid laugh and the kid eyes. What does it represent for you to be in Paris?
Oh, you know, this was always, you know, I got the Eiffel Tower tattooed on my ankle. That's something that I always wanted. Paris, it was always glamorized as one of the sexiest and most fashionable cities in the world. And when I came here, I was like, yo, I love the vibe. I love it. I love when I see people out in the streets, like it's Miami on South Beach or New York City, people everywhere. I love how everybody active. So this is my type of vibe.
You really did a tattoo with the Eiffel Tower?
Yeah.
Where is it?
Right here on my leg.
Wow. Why did you did this? When was it?
I might have got it. It's still healing. Not even a month ago. Maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago I got it. But it always just represented one of the most powerful, iconic locations. You know, it was just something that was powerful to me and I related to it some kind of way. It just grabbed me.
Iconic is a world that describes your career, like 10 albums in 10 years. It's rare right now. A few artists can do 10 albums and still be here, and 10 successful albums. Right now, you're gonna drop Port of Miami 2. I remember Port of Miami 1.
You better believe it.
Which is a classic.
You better believe it.
And the first word I heard from this album is like, the real Miami. You put Miami on the map with two words.
You better believe it, because yeah. It is. You know, that's what make Miami what it is. It's such a beautiful place, but it's also, you know, a place where you can live on the edge. You get to walk that tightrope.
10 years ago, we can talk about this like a classic, like when Snoop can talk about Doggy Style.
Right.
Do you remember all the record session, all the writing, all the inspiration from Port of Miami?
I do.
First question, tell me about Hustling.
I remember when I actually got the beat. I remember my homie calling me like, yo, Fat Boy, I got this beat. I want to give you this beat. And it's usually my homies call me when they got a bunch of beats for me. Yo, boy, I got a beat CD for you. I got some beats. This was like, yo, I got this one beat. I was like, cool, let's meet up. We met up in Kara City at one of my homies' house who, you know, big time hustler. And I got the CD and I put it in right then, and when I rolled off, I was like, you know, before you ever have a hit record, it's hard to say what a hit record is if you've never written one. But as soon as I put the beat in, and by the time I made a right turn, I was like, this different. And I began thinking about what all I was gonna say on it immediately. And what made it real dope was Trina. She had a show 3 hours away that night. And the very first verse I wrote on the way to the Trina show, because I was gonna go, she always used to let me come out and perform. And I wrote the first verse, and when I got to the concert, I told the DJ to play that beat. And I rapped the first verse, and I just remember the look in this one dude in the crowd. It was a look I never got from nobody ever for any music I had ever written. I went back later that night, and maybe 2 or 3 days later, I finished it. I released it maybe a month after then, and that was the end of 05. That was December 05. By the end of January 06, I was in the middle of the biggest Ben war in the game.
I was in the club the first time I heard it, like the DJ spinned it like 3-5 times. And about 3 times, everybody knew the lyrics. Like it was at the same time, simple, iconic. The images were strong. Everybody said, I'm in a distribution, I'm like Atlantic, the real Noriega. It's like, how did you spin that?
It just came to me. I felt like the lyrics had to most definitely match the velocity and how powerful the track was. The production was that powerful. You know, shout out to the Runners. You know, they was from Florida, and man, it was just, I was like, I'm not gonna let the beat, you know, overpower my lyrics, you know what I mean? So I wanted to make sure that the lyrics were catchy, but just as powerful, and that's how it came together, man.
The same for Push It to the Limit. Like, everybody knew the song from the movie Scarface. Everybody was listening to that song. It was my motivation song when I was a kid, you know?
Right.
But in the good way.
Right.
And you took it and did the new stuff. I was wondering, like, if Rick Ross is doing part of Miami 2, how many times was you working on it? How many times have you been writing it? Because I know how important to you is the writing.
Well, I most definitely challenged myself lyrically. So there are some records on this new album where I written the record, recorded the record, and was satisfied, and a week later came back, wrote the verses again. Maybe one verse I felt was better than this first verse. I'ma swap for this because it says something that, you know, but I just had to challenge myself in that way, you know, and I did that a couple times. A lot of times I write it the first time and it's, oh my God, you can't change nothing. And sometimes I just listen to it and, yo, let's challenge it. Let's challenge it. You know, let's make sure this is potent as it could be. Because it's like a needle in the arm, baby.
It's, you know, complicated. What I mean? What you're writing is really complicated because it's like a sportman. When you see like a great artist doing a dunk, you like, it's easy for him. But when you listen, we listen to your flow, it looks easy. It's, you know, it's pure. I was always wondering, like, how do you write? Is it in your head? Do you have like some rhyming stocks?
Yeah, I do. I still write because I'm the type of writer that I could cut a beat on and begin writing the first verse, but 15 minutes later, 10 minutes later, I'm actually thinking of the ending as I'm writing the beginning. So that's when I have to write down certain things because this is the way the record should end, you know? And that's important to me as well. I don't just write everything as it comes to me. I think it's certain things should be placed in certain positions. And I want the rhymes to be complicated, but for the listener, they should be easy to listen to. I don't want it to sound like I'm trying to be the the most lyrical ever, even though I want that lyrical vibe to it. But I want it to be an easy, enjoyable listen.
Because you've never been into the trends of the flow. Like, during like all those years, you have so many trends. Right now, it's the Migos flow. 20 years ago, it was the DazFX flow.
Right.
And you never took the other flows.
Right. I believe everybody's style is your style, you know? And I was a huge fan of DazFX. So, you know, all of the different cadences, the different chopped up flows, and that's dope too. But I felt like Port of Miami 1, it niched my own vibe in the game. And that's something that hasn't went anywhere. So let's do what we do and just keep elevating what we do.
Your comeback has been announced by this track with Future and the verse with Pusha T. Let's talk about the Pusha T album. Were you in the house to do the track?
No, I was actually overseas. I believe I was in Africa at the time. And they reached out to us, and my manager, Juan, he came and told me, Pusha just reached out. I told him, make sure you give him my new number so we could get on the phone and connect. But I said, if it's a record, let me hear it now. And he had sent it, and I listened to it right then, and I believe I wrote the verse either that night or the following night. So while I was overseas, I did the verse, and I sent it to him. He loved it.
Kanye West said, like, he was going to drop one album a week. Will you work with him on an album?
I'm not sure. You know, he has his way of doing things, and I have my own way of doing things. So maybe him produce a record for me, yeah. But other than that, I'm not sure.
Who could you make a kind of Watch the Throne with? Rick Ross and?
It's a few artists that we could do that with. It's a few artists. I've had that discussion of, you know, possibilities before in the past and recently, you know. People hearing that hard piano record with me and Pusha, it was a lot of talk. But me and Pusha doing a project, you know, you never know.
You've collaborated with French people, like him.
Ils parlent de nous partout, ils voudraient nous éteindre. Bande de bâtards, vous faites des alliances avec des timbres.
Tell me about this track.
He just reached out to me, you know. I laced him, took Cam. I was like, yo, your voice dope, you know what I mean? You got a dope vibe. I see you hustling, you know what I mean? And we just shot the video on the beach in Miami as well. He dope.
Yeah?
Yeah, he dope.
Can we talk about the Meek Mill case?
Right.
Could you explain to the friends what is going on now with this artist?
You know, Meek Mill is spearheading a movement that's just not about Meek Mill, but it's a lot of young black dudes that's wrongly prosecuted in a system that's obviously unbalanced, unfair. And, you know, for the ones that's, if it wasn't Meek Mill who had, you know, the support he had and the finances for the legal team that he had, he would still be incarcerated right now. When, you know, he started out 18 with a 2 or 3 year probation, and it's over a decade later and you're still on probation for the same cases. So it's a disgrace.
How do you explain the relation between the U.S. government and the justice and all those black kids who are incarcerated? Is there a link?
Obviously, it's not a relationship. It's a pothole that was set.
Is there a plan?
The streets are the plan. Because I can't speak for the politics. I play no role in the politics. I only speak on behalf of the streets. And everybody that we could pull out of that pothole, I want to help as much as I can help. You know, so, and that's why I love Meek Mill position, you know, him coming home. He's still spearheading that campaign, and he's still speaking up for all the ones that need to come home. Prosecuted unjustly, sentenced unjustly.
How is it possible for a kid growing not trusting the justice, not trusting his country.
That's every young black boy in the ghetto. After you see what's been going on for so long, how can you trust them? How can you? I don't.
So what is the result when those kids are growing up?
Everybody got different, you know, everybody got different concepts. I know mine is unifying the streets as much as we can. And I think that's what Meek Mill position did. I think that's what Meek Mill case did. It brought a lot of light to something that's been in the dark for a long time. And a change has to come. A change will come. When? I can't say when. But as long as we keep our feet on their neck and keep pushing on and sticking together, a change will come.
Back in the days, the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense tried to unify, to put some rules, but they've been divided and they've been persecuted.
It was murdered, yeah. Murdered, prosecuted, sent to prison, yeah. The hit was put out on them, yeah.
I was always wondering how did a guy from your generation who saw the generation of his big brothers and grand cousins trying to organize themselves with the Black Panther Party and being destroyed. How did you grow up?
I feel like, you know, after you see that, you got to move a little different. I feel like the party's still there. There's still a lot of brothers that's on that, but you got to move a little different now. We got to move a little wiser, because you can't go to war with these people. They got more guns than us, you know? So we got to think different, you know? And we got to fight the war a little different. But it's still in our heart, and that's what's important. And it's going to be a day when, you know?
Talking about the way to be an example, the thing is, like, the mass media can say, like, Rick Ross is a bad example. But for the kids, you are a good example, because a lot of kids did their own label, invested in many business, bought some studios doing records. Do you realize the fact that some medias are making you the devil and the kids love you?
Who cares? The streets are the ones that we make music for. We don't do it for the media. The media wouldn't last, you know, without us, you know what I mean? And the motherfuckers behind the media half of the time, what are they doing with their life? You know what I mean? So, and I have no interest in that. I only have interest in the youngsters and the hustlers, you know, and that's what we make music for. That's who I want to be leaders and examples for. The same way, you know, Puff Daddy and you know, Dre and Sean Combs was examples for us. That's what we do it for.
Let's talk about the word hustling. You said in many interviews that a mom who raises his child is a hustler.
Right.
A teacher can be a hustler.
Right.
What is your definition of that?
Somebody that's going, you know, work harder than and make sure whatever their goals are, whatever their dreams are, they go after it. You know what I'm saying? Whoever poured this glass of ice water is a hustler. You know what I'm saying? Because I feel like even if you're the CEO of the company, you got to hustle like you still mopping floors. That's the way you continue to be a successful CEO. You know what I mean? And if not, it might be somebody like me that's in the company that's going to outwork you and, you know, come for the throne.
Right now, I'm facing a grown man who looks to have found inner peace. I was watching your former interviews. It was not the same guy. What has changed?
What has changed most definitely was a level of security. I think certain levels of security bring on certain levels of maturity. But that devilish side of me is still there. You know, I still love, you know, that grit and that grime. I still love bumping heads, and that's what make me love hip hop so much. That's what to me makes it, you know, the number one genre of music, is that competitive spirit. And as long as you remain competitive, I feel you're still in the game. The day that you're no longer competitive, or to me, willing to accept those challenges that come with being number one, you're no longer in the game to me. You know what I mean?
It's ironic what I'm going to say, but it's very rare to listen some rappers talking about the hip-hop spirit.
Well, you know, I most definitely understand where you come from because it's a lot of, you know, the game has been changing. So when you say Dos Effects, you're talking about a different era. You know, I was a youngster too, coming up listening to them, but I was a student. I watched everything that went on with the legends before me. And it's kind of like I'm in that medium for the youngsters who may not know about those OGs. I know about them as well as I know about the youngsters. So I'm right in that medium. So I got to make sure I, you know, give them a little bit of that game too. So you know how I go.
When you talk about to be a student, you're talking about this culture.
Right.
In Rick Ross, we heard like the Biggie Spirit. We heard Kool J Rap. We heard UGK. We heard all these references. And right now, a lot of young rappers don't know those references.
And that's what I feel make us so valuable. That's what make us so valuable because we got to keep those legends alive. And I feel like if you in hip hop, if you in this culture, you better know who Kool G Rap is. You better know who Parrish Smith and Eric Sermon is. You better know, better be students. You better know who B.I.G. is. You better know who these people, you gotta know who these people are. You know, and I was a next level student. You know what I mean? I wanted to know where Marley Marl was from. I wanted to know where they was from and what made them start producing beats as far as the production, the writers, you know, everything about the game. I wanted to be a student of and know, and I studied. You know what I mean? And the artists that influenced me the most, I always keep their names alive. I always represent.
You've paid a tribute to B.I.G. with the song You're Nobody, Till Somebody Kills You. You took the same beat. You killed it with Diddy in the intro. We are in a new era right now. And with the social medias, everybody wants to be somebody. And when you took that song, You're Nobody, Till Somebody Kills You, it had a different sense.
It did. It most definitely did. You know, B.I.G., I just feel, was one of the most iconic. You know, and when you talk about that record, you know, I felt connected to it. I felt the parallels on different levels, you know, and I wanted to bring that energy back just on a different vibe, on a different side. So I brought my wordplay in it. Somewhat my experiences and the visions and the things I've seen in it, you know, and put it out there for the youngsters and the, you know, everybody who understood what that meant.
You said something very interesting, like you choose to be a customer or a producer.
Just meaning, are you gonna consume or create? It's your decision. You know what I mean? We know what it takes. You could spin every day. When are you going to make something? When are you going to make something? You know, because it won't be long before you bankrupt, homie. You got to be creative. And that's how you come to the table with bosses, being creative and bringing something to the table. And it don't cost a dime, but that creativity, it costs. You got to, that comes from the soul, you know what I'm saying?
Did you pay the cost to be the boss?
Most definitely. Most definitely.
What was that cost?
A little bit of everything. And I kept it transparent for the game. A little bit of everything. Everything.
Some friends? You lost some friends?
I feel if you lost a friend, they never really was nothing to lose. You may have gained something losing them. That's really how that go. Because if somebody, you know, really gonna, you know, ride for you, if they really by your side, they gonna be there regardless of if you up or down, whatever it is. You know what I mean? It's I got friends that I haven't seen for years, but if, you know, something happened to me and I wake up in the hospital, they standing right over me next to my bed and my mom over there, and you know, and it's certain people that's in the room. It's certain people that, you know, my mom only let in the room. You know what I mean? It's that type of vibe.
Thank God you're here.
Yeah, better believe it. Better believe it.
You know, many people say that success can change people.
Right.
Did you felt a lot of people change around you?
You know, you see things, you experience things, but not a lot of that. You know what I mean? The era I came up in Miami, it was like I came up around homies that were successful in the streets. So I had experience dealing with finances even before I got them. I saw what the effects could be. I saw how it go down, you know what I mean? And so that's what I think really played a major role in my longevity. It's a lot of artists that have sold more records than me, but they haven't generated the finances that I have over a period of time or live the lifestyle that I live, and that come from other experiences before the music. You mean? And so I applaud all that, and that's what you hear when you hear my records.
When you grow up being broke and you live the other part of your life being rich, how is it in your mind?
I try to keep a balance. You know, it was some advice that one of my best friend's father, who's serving 40 years right now in the penitentiary, Michael DeLancey. It was an advice he gave us. I think I was 13 at the time. And he said, nobody should know the difference when you got $10 in your pocket or $10,000. He said, if you got $10 in your pocket and you eating beef patties, when you get $10,000, make sure you eat a beef patty every now and then. I might have been 13 at the time, and I was like, oh, okay, that's how that go. And here we are, you know what I mean? I still move the same way. You know, I still, you know, go get those sneakers and, you know, I still rock the same thing. Shout out, the Star Cow gave us the shirts. You know what? We came out here and I went and got t-shirts. You know, I just keep so much of the same energy regardless of the situation I'm in. You know what I mean? So I feel like things are going to change. That's natural, but the foundation should always stay the same.
You don't realize that if you do a track with Future with the word Gucci in it, everybody's going to buy some Gucci?
Yeah.
Because Gucci owes you a lot of money right now.
That record and that idea came from a conversation I had with Dapper Dan. I went and seen Dapper Dan, you know, the original, you know, OG.
Yeah, for the people who don't know him, he was in New York.
New York City.
He was the first one to took the Vuitton, the Gucci, the Hermes stuff, and mix it, patch it, doing some crazy suits.
When you look at Paid in Full and you see Eric B and Rakim with the big Gucci jackets, that was from Dapper Dan. When you saw Salt and Pepper with the dope jackets, when you saw the Fat Boys, when you saw LL Cool J, right? And we had those conversations, and he actually, when I told him that Eric B and Rakim, when Eric B, Rakim was looking over his shoulder with the big Gucci patch on the back, I was like, yo, that blew my mind. And he sent me that picture, and I actually hung it up on my wall. And I was like, man, you know, back then, fashion played just as much a role in hip hop as the music. It was always the music and fashion. That's what made the culture what it was, the music, the fashion. The jewels came maybe third. And so after we had that conversation, when I got with Future, that's where the concept of green Gucci suit came from. Because I felt like, you know, when I was a youngster, once you made it, you got you a Dapper Dan. Your wardrobe came from Dapper Dan, and he laced you up with a Gucci jacket, you know what I mean? And that's what me and Future, you know, we kind of laughed about. And he was like, oh, man, boy, I would have had Dapper Dan make me a yellow onesie, you know. And we just laughed in the room, and I was like, yo. And we cut the beat on, and we just started vibing. And I was like, green Gucci suit, green Gucci. You know, because that's something that I would have always, I always wanted to have as a youngster. And now here I am, you know what I mean? And Dapper Dan laced me up at the BET Awards. I wore Dapper Dan Gucci suit.
Right now, when we see, like, Balenciaga, all the great fashion brands, they're doing what Dapper Dan was doing 20 years ago.
Of course, that's what they're doing now.
Yeah. And right now, Virgil Abloh is at Vuitton's. Would you like to go into that fashion business?
You know, I've spoken to a few people about it. It was nothing that I rushed into, but I love fashion. I love what Virgil is doing. I love it. I love fashion. I love the styles. So you never know what may happen, you know what I mean? But it's just something I would want to happen naturally, organically, you know what I mean?
Do you know in how many business are you involved?
I don't. I swear, when I'm posting pictures sometimes and I try to tag, I'll be like, yo, I forget sometimes. You know, it's just, you know, and to me, that's fun. That's dope. You know what I mean? You know, we work with a lot of companies, a lot of brands, but they got to be a brand that I love. You know what I mean? I've said this before. I had a 7-figure offer from a cigarette company before, but I don't smoke cigarettes. So I told them I didn't want to do that. You know what I mean? So if it's something that I love, I love to be a part of it.
You should create an advertising company, because I remember of you like 5 or 6 years ago, you did the best advertising stuff. Like, you were in a club dropping money and all the world has talked about it. And it was less expensive than taking one space in a TV. It was like the most genius advertising.
It's true.
That you did.
It's true. It's true. And you know, once again, it's something, as long as it go hand in hand with what we do. If it's Official Bel Air, we enjoying ourselves in the club. If it's the music, if it's the fashion, if it's the, you know, the drinks, as long as it goes with the culture and it's bringing something dope to the table.
Do you remember that night?
I do. I remember.
How did you have this idea?
It just kind of came. You remember? I knew at one album release party, I took a helicopter to the club. You know, I wanted to throw some money out of the helicopter, but the pilot told me, no, the money gonna go into, get caught up in everything, we might crash. So I was like, cool, just land us, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, we just went in the club and had a good time, you know what I'm saying? And
where did you find all this money? Which ATM can give you all this money?
No. You know my banker, shout out to JC. I give him a heads up when I want to go do something like that. Yo, next week I want to go to the club. I need some ones, I need some 20s, I need some 50s. And, you know, I may say I need this X amount in this X amount in that, and have it for me, because he had to go to different places and get it all together.
Because in the US, the artists are paying everything. You pay for your promotion, you pay for your video, you pay for touring, but what you paid is like less than a video clip, and all the world has talked about it.
Of course. That's the biggest boss, man. That's the biggest boss, baby. That's the boss, baby. And we enjoyed it, and I'll do it again.
You'll do it?
Yeah, I would. I would.
Tell me about when you were a kid and you wanted to be a boss. Who was the first boss that you met?
Oh, man. My best friend, his dad. My best friend, his dad, he was the first person that I remember, the first day I ever got a $50 bill. That's Michael DeLancey, once again. You know, he's serving time right now. But my best friend, I remember, he the one who had the Nintendo. He used to have to put it in the grocery bag and bring it down to my house and, you know, let me play it. But, his dad, you know, had the big Mercedes Benz pull up on the block. So it's like everybody stopped what they was doing. And the headlights on the Mercedes had the wipers on them then. And, you know, I just remember, like, yo, I look back at my mom and dad car. I was like, one day we gonna have one of those, you know what I mean? And I never had any jealousy in my heart. I think that was one of my true blessings. I was able to see others do better than me and not have no envy. You know, and so when I started working at the local car wash right up the street, all the rich hustlers would pull up. I wanted to wash their cars, you know what I'm saying? I wiped their seats down better than anybody else. And if it was time left while they was gone, because a lot of them would come, drop their cars off. You know, they had a cassette holder that hold the cassettes. I would sit in the car and listen to all their different cassettes. I put them in alphabetical order for them. You know, and when they came back, they was like, yo, I want the little fat kid to do my car, you know what I mean? And so I just always told myself, once I got in position, that's how I was gonna do it.
I was a fat kid and I'm still a fat man.
Yeah, me too, happy.
Yeah.
Happy. Yeah. We the biggest, baby, we the biggest, you know what I'm saying?
Let's be fat.
Better believe it.
You did a diet.
Yeah.
Tell me about this diet.
I started working out, you know what I mean? I just changed the way I was eating. You know, I used to be in the studio to, of course, 5, 6, 7 in the morning, but 2, 3 in the morning, I would order steaks, order. And I was like, yo, I'm gonna still eat steak, but I'm gonna just make sure I do it around 6 or 7 p.m., you know what I'm saying? And as it got later, I'm gonna eat lighter. Y'all bring me some fruit, bring me some salad, you know what I mean? Drink some more water. That's what they told me, my doctors was like, yo, you don't drink no water, man. You gotta, you know, this and that. And so I just had to make a few changes. I was forced to.
I was talking about it with DJ Khaled, which has the same dream body as you and me.
Right.
And he was telling me something interesting. It's like when he was growing up as a broke kid, he didn't know what was the good food and the bad food. He didn't know that.
When Khaled was young, he wasn't really big. You know what I'm saying? Once he started getting that good money, you know what I'm saying? He started eating them ribs and all that, you know what I mean? Start living that life, baby, you know what I'm saying? He did. That's real language.
When was the last time you did the party? Because when I see like your videos,
right,
and I watch all that you're doing as work, as a businessman, as an artist, I'm wondering, like, Rick Ross is not doing parties at all. He's working.
Yeah. I'm always working. And I found out and learned a way to enjoy even when I'm working. Just like now, I'm in Paris and, you know, we promoting a new album, Port of Miami 2, but I'm enjoying it. You know what I mean? And so that's what I do, you know. The big parties that I throw at the estate, the big pool parties and all of the stuff we do for fun, you know, that's just something that we all enjoy, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, I make sure we take time out to celebrate a little bit.
Because it's important to say to the kids that this is not real life. Not all the daily life. I never saw that life. Is it the real life?
I just show them how I do it. You know,
I
show them. Yeah. I show them, you know, I go on Snapchat all the time and like, yo, this is where I live, you know what I mean? This is how we really work hard for this. This could be every day for you if you go hard for it. And it may not happen overnight, or it may do for you. You never know. You just got to chase whatever your dreams are, whatever going to make you happy. You know what I mean? That's all I try to let them know.
What are you dreaming of?
Just seeing my team. You know, I'm happy Meek Mill home. I'm happy Meek Mill back on top of his game. You know, I want to see my little homies happy. I'm happy Gunplay just released the album. Wale, it's always about the team with me. You know what I mean? I'm happy about this Port of Miami 2 album that's finna drop. You know, we getting our cameos on in the acting now. You know, I just was in the Uncle Drew film, small cameo. I just was in the Superfly film. We got a couple more films that's on the way. And, you know, it's a good chance I may turn up in that next year, so.
Your story, your life is a movie.
It is.
Will you do it on screenplay?
It's a good chance.
Have you started to work about it?
Nah, I haven't. I haven't, because I've written another movie, but when the time right, it's something I will be able to put together in 48 hours. You know what I mean? Because I understand the most pivotal points from the beginning, the introduction, the middle, and here we are now. So it wouldn't be difficult at all.
Because Dre did a blockbuster with the NWA story.
Right, it was classic.
If you're telling your story, it could be a blockbuster.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Shout out to F. Gary Gray. Shout out to my homie. That's who filmed my video for Super High. He one of the greatest directors ever, and that's who directed the Straight Outta Compton film. And it's a possibility for that, you know. And when the time come, I feel, you know, you never know. You never know.
You've been on a track produced by Dre with Dre and Jay-Z and you. Tell me about the recording of that song.
Dr. Dre came to Miami and invited me over to the studio, and I got in the studio and he played me all these different beats. And I remember I wrote 5 records in maybe, you know, a couple hours. And I was like, Dre, let me keep this one, you know what I'm saying? Let me reach out to the big homie Jay-Z, and I sent Jay-Z what me and Dre had already did, and he laced it. You know, we titled that 3 Kings, and, you know, that spoke for itself. But, you know, those are icons. Dre the biggest producer ever in the game. So, you know, when I sat there, I was just like, yo, You know, I'm thinking about Eazy-E and, you know, just all the classic records that they did, you know, when I was young. It was like, that was, to me, unbelievable.
That year, I met Dre. And I was, when I was watching him, I was feeling the same stuff that you were saying. I was seeing in front of me like 30 years of classics, of hip-hop, of culture. And what Dre did, pushing the limits with Beats and now Apple Music, is it a model for you?
Of course.
How did you react it when he did his biggest move?
I told you, like, I always been one that's, I never envy, you know, the ones that come before me. I actually pay homage. And you know, that's something that these youngsters gotta understand. You gotta have somebody show you the way. And that's what Dre's doing for us. He's showing us the way. It may be a different format, it may be a different type of business, but this is how it goes, you know? And I appreciate that. I accept that knowledge. I appreciate that knowledge. I'm still a student. On my 10th album, I'm still a student of the game. I still watch what Jay-Z does. I still watch what Dre does, as well as I'm a student to some of the younger artists. I still see what the youngsters do. I like to call them streamers. That's what I call them, streamers, you know what I'm saying? But I'm still a student to the game.
When you're talking about the competitive side of this music,
right?
Who are your best competitors right now?
I only compete with the best, you know? And it may not be a negative energy, but it's still competition because we all want to be number one. We all put those long hours in to be number one, and without a doubt, Rose still want to be number one, you know what I mean? And so I'm competing with whoever the best is at that moment, at that time. If you the best, if you in the top slot, you Rose competition, and I'm most definitely yours, you know what I mean? And sometimes the game get ugly, and a lot of times it don't. But either way, I've always been one that accepted all challenges. I've never had a problem.
Is it a great teaser for Puffed Off Miami 2?
Of course. Yeah.
What can we find on this album? Because it's a secret.
Yeah, it is. You know what I mean? I'm just keeping everything real personal until it comes, you know what I'm saying? And I think that moment when you really sit down and listen to it, you say, damn, I should have known it. I should have known he was going. I should have known Rose was going, you know? And That's that feeling that I make sure I want, you know, somebody that has listened to all my projects from Port of Miami 1. That's what I'm thinking about when I'm recording and working on Port of Miami 2 while I'm finalizing the track listing. I had the laptop with me on the big Ferris wheel, the view of Paris down here. I got on the wheel looking over the city, and I had the album playing. And, you know, that's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about everybody that was there from the first album to here we are now.
When you do that, it means so much.
Yeah, it do.
When you breathe.
It do.
Because you know what you get.
Yeah. Yeah. Uncut dope, baby. It's uncut dope.
Is there a new Maybach Music volume on it?
You got to see. You know, that was always classic and fun for me to do. I always love those Maybach Musics.
I was talking about your influence and the brands. You did Gucci, Maybach. Do you realize, and I'm asking the question a second time, how much do they own you?
You know, I just got the new two-door Maybach coupe. And I got the first one of 300 in that baby blue color. And I remember when I called, it was another celebrity that wanted the first one while I was on the phone, and I'm like, yo, stop. And they're like, you right. We finna hang up with them. We got you. So if you go back to my Instagram story, you see the one of 300. That's the very first one of that one that Maybach made sure that I got. And, you know, it's a lot of love, you know.
Did the fame made your life more easy or more money, more problems?
It's most definitely things that you got to learn that come along with the new finances. It's most definitely, you know, if somebody slip and fall where I was at before, they would have got up and kept walking. But now if they own your property, And if they slip and fall, they may sue you. So that's something that you just gotta, oh, I get it now. So when Biggie say, more money, more problems, those are the type of things that he talking about. Something that could be so simple, if money wasn't involved, is made complicated now because of the financial gain and the financial opportunity that, wow, it wasn't like that before, it's like that now. So that's something that you just gotta accept that come with.
I didn't know how was working the financial system in the US. Like, if you have 1 million, the bank can get you 10. And you can buy stuff.
Right.
Without your own money. It's really easy to have money from the banks. We saw a lot of rappers and a lot of artists, comedians, who were like making a lot of money and who are now broke. Did you saw that? Was it an example to?
Of course, yeah? Of course.
How do you manage this money?
I make more. Like I say, you either gonna be a consumer or a producer. What are you gonna do? You just gonna, you know, that's your decision, type of person you are. When I speak of hustling, you see my IG name is Rich Forever. You know, you gotta make good decisions. And being a boss, that's the largest responsibility you have is managing and maintaining whatever it is you have. You know, so that's most definitely an example to pass. And a lot of people that's, same way I study the greats and the way they win, I study the ones who lose as well and the way they've lost.
Could you give me your top five MC of all time?
My top five, Ice Cube, Jay-Z, I gotta say UGK, 8-Ball and MJG. You know, that's, and it's a lot of dope artists that I love. Lil Wayne, it's a lot of dope artists that I love. But the music that I've been listening to, I still listen to On Top of the World by 8-Ball and MJG. I still listen to Riding Dirty every day. You know what I mean? Every day. Those are my favorite MCs.
I got the last question for you. This show is called Click. What is your definition of a click?
Of a click? Organization, baby. That's the squad. That's the gang. That's the empire. That's the click. You know what I mean? And our click go worldwide. It's not just the obvious ones you see on the screen. Our membership is underground a lot of times. A lot of times we don't want you to see who all our partners are. So when we go to war, you get hit from all sides, baby.
Welcome to our click.
Better believe it.
Welcome.
Welcome to my clique.
Thank you.
Better believe it.
Could you show me how you do your gimmick? Huh? Always try to do it, I can't.
See, I gotta be in the booth, baby. That's a vibe, man. That's what I'm in the music, you know what I'm saying? The headphones on and I'm zoned out, you know what I'm saying? That's where that comes from, the stomach. That comes from the gut.
Huh?
You could do it.
No.
You just gotta be turned up. You can't do it sitting down. It's when you stand, you know, standing up and you had a few glasses of Bel Air. You could do it.
I'll try to do it.
Merci d'avoir écouté ce podcast. N'hésitez pas à vous abonner pour ne rater aucun épisode. Dites-le à vos amis et vous ferez encore plus d'amis. Vous pouvez retrouver
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.